The next topic we're going to move to is climate change, and Andrew Johnson's going to be asking the questions. Thanks, Andrew.
Okay, thanks. My first question on climate change is around a carbon price, and it's directed to the Greens. The government was unsuccessful in its attempt to introduce an emissions trading scheme, Libby, and it was primarily about putting a price on carbon and a cap on carbon. And it was as a result of opposition from the Greens, Family First and the LNP. So I want to first check that you're in favour of a cap on emissions and a carbon price, which I assume you are. But my other question is about what's the best mechanism for doing that, and when do you think we're going to see it happen? When can we get that done as a country?
Yes. Yes, the Greens do want to see a carbon levy or a carbon tax. There's nothing radical or outlandish about the policy. The policy is the policy that Ross Garnaut put forward following his commissioned report by the Rudd government. And the Greens have already made a commitment that in balance of power that they want to work with the government to bring in a carbon levy immediately. I'm talking from memory here, but I think Ross Garnaut recommended something around $23 per tonne. The commitment to capping emissions, there's a timeline in which we want to see this country at zero emissions by 2050. Now, this is about international social responsibility. Already India has a tax on carbon, not just for its domestic coal and carbon emissions, but anything that's imported into the country. So India, a third world country, a developing country, is already ahead of us on this. China doesn't yet have a tax on carbon, but it is way ahead of us in terms of renewable energy. Christine Milne, the Green Senator from Tasmania, has put forward plan after plan that shows it is achievable for Australia to switch to 100% renewable energy now. What we need, though, the kind of infrastructure that the country needs to make that a reality, is to put the electricity grid in place. The solar stations and the wind farms can't be put where there isn't already existing grid lines. And unless the federal government takes this issue with two hands and starts planning seriously, we will have crisscrossing lines and lines not going where the renewable sources are. But the good news is that both the geothermal energy and the best sites for solar energy are similar sites, so we could actually be putting in place the infrastructure now. And that's a big part of the Greens program, to get that done as soon as possible, both for job creation and to stop the polluting industries of coal and coal seam gas and UCG. And part of the reasons I'm perhaps sounding a little edgy tonight is I spent much of today in at the rally working with many of the farming groups that I know from the Darling Downs, who were rallying outside Parliament House today to oppose the impact that coal seam gas and coal mining and underground coal gasification are industrialising the Darling Downs and putting our food bowls at risk. So it's not just about climate change, it's about a sane, sustainable policy. And we could, you know, I don't care whether you believe in climate change or not, this is just good policy on every level in terms of Australians taking control of their energy future, doing it with the minimum harm to people and the environment.
Thank you, Libby. I'll get Andrew to ask his second question on climate change and then invite Claire and the other panellists to respond. Andrew, your question?
So my first question was really in the mitigation, how do we reduce the effects of climate change? But my second one is directed to Family First initially, is around the impact this has on people. People in low-lying countries in the Pacific, in other parts of the world, particularly through our partner churches. The United Church has the largest range of partner churches in the Pacific, say they're already facing the prospect of losing their homes through sea level rise. Now, in the event that there's significant sea level rise that causes displacement of people, are you in support of offering Australia as a place for resettlement for those displaced by climate change?
I think I've probably got the easiest answer of the night. Absolutely. My husband and I have travelled to Bangladesh three times and many other countries, and Bangladesh is particularly in danger of this. And we have been in places where every year when the floods come through, people have to relocate and they're totally out of their homes. So, yes, by all means, we have to take people in. And I'd love it if Australia could get back to being known as being a compassionate country. I think we've lost that tag to a degree, and we need to open our doors to people as they need them. There's rural centres, again, as I travel through Queensland, there are rural centres crying out for people to come in and to live in the areas. So they would just welcome an influx of people. And if we could help people and help our country at the same time, that would be wonderful.
Okay. I'm going to invite Claire and Brett, maybe Brett starting with you, to pick up either of those questions, the price on carbon and the alleviation of the carbon footprint and the mitigation for, or the relief for people affected, please.
David, I'll give you the official coalition answer, and then I might just give, if I'm allowed to, just a quick reflection on what happened to the coalition late last year and how we didn't handle the issue very well. I mean, I don't mind admitting that to this audience, we didn't.
Look, can you use the microphone? I'm sorry.
Yes, sorry. First of all, the official position, of course, of the coalition is direct action and in a sense, encouraging companies by offering incentives rather than penalties, by sequestration and so forth. That's our way of reaching the targets, the 5% cuts by 2020. That's the official coalition policy, and everyone knows that. Whether they agree with it or not, that's the policy. Can I just say this, David? Late last year, and everyone here would know this, the coalition had enormous difficulty coming up with a policy approach to deal with one of the world's great, and Libby's right, one of the great issues facing us. And can I put it simply? Let me put it very, very simply. In the end, and Claire would know this, I crossed the floor on this and indeed resigned from the front bench to force a change. And can I just summarise the position quickly? And this is now, in effect, the position that in the absence of commitments from our major trading partners at the time, I believe that it would damage Australia, damage our standard of living, would not be, in fact, in our national interest to do so unless our major trading partners adopted similar policy. Why? Because in the absence of them adopting similar policies, okay, Australia contributes, what, 1.5% to the world's... Let's say 1.5. It would not affect... Sure, but still, it wouldn't... Speaking globally, it would have no effect on the environment at all. But I can say this with certainty, it would affect our economy and our standard of living. In other words, yes, we should act, but it won't have any effect on the world's environment until our major trading partners do something similar. And that was the argument that carried the day, and I might add, that's the argument largely, except they're doing a different way of doing it, that the government now adopts. That's true. They're going to wait and see what our major trading partners do. That argument won the day.
Thanks, Brett. Claire, your response to those issues too.
As everyone knows, we went to the last election with a commitment to act on climate change, and we developed a process and we took it to the Parliament twice. And I think there are over 30 hours of debate in the Senate where we tried to get our policy, Andrew, which did have a cap, did have a process for having a cost and a trading price on carbon, and we couldn't get it up. And believe me, that was not through lack of trying. What we've done now is actually accepted that we did not bring the community with us in that debate, and that is to our shame that we couldn't do that. And if anyone doubts the degree of opposition there is to the change, in fact, any change, I would invite you to have a look at my email on a daily basis. And for what it's worth, the people who are absolutely opposed to change at any cost and deny the fact there's a problem outweigh the correspondence by much more than 5-1, Libby. I wish it was less than that. So we have a job to do to just make sure that people understand why there is a need to make the change. What we've done is released a series of policies which are looking at direct action, as Brett said, trying to make it easier for individuals and groups and communities to make change. We're looking at the issues around ensuring that there is more engagement with communities. We've already looked, and there's all these things are on our website, looking at the very issue that Libby brought forward about making sure that the increased expenditure which we brought forward, and we're going to bring more in terms of alternate energy, can be linked into the grid. And you're quite right, at the moment it's piecemeal, and there needs to be processes to ensure that happens more easily. That has already been released in a policy. What we want to do is ensure that we have work in the Parliament and the community that brings people together on the need to make change. We actually had the issue of Kyoto there as a point to actually work towards, to say, let's make sure that Australia has a policy which we can take to Kyoto as a global player, because we are part of a global issue, to ensure that we have effective policy. We couldn't do that because we couldn't convince our own Parliament that was the way to go. And at Kyoto, it didn't work either. Even though there was so much evidence, and Andrew, and particularly on the second question about the Pacific, there was so much gut-wrenching evidence at Kyoto about what was happening in our region. And in terms of our policy on that, the Parliamentary Secretary on the Pacific has worked very hard on that. Was Duncan Kerr, before he resigned, has worked very hard with working with our Pacific neighbours, specifically on a response to what will happen to what I believe is going to happen in terms of people losing their land and their livelihood. What we've agreed is that, as in with the future policy we're going to talk about, we need to work globally on that as well. And we've committed to work with our UN neighbours to ensure that it's not just an Australian response to the Pacific, it's a Pacific and an international response to the Pacific. So our response to your second question is, yes, we have a responsibility. How it will actually play out will be a shared response, bringing everyone together to work out how it's best done. And that won't be making one agreement with one nation. We haven't got anyone from the party here. One agreement with one Pacific nation on that issue. It'll be working together. So in terms of our overall response to climate change, we have a commitment that we need to ensure that there will be change. We haven't budged. We believe that it's absolutely critical. We failed as a government to get that through Parliament. Everyone knows that debate. We need to look at it in a different way. But there's no doubt that there needs to be action. We've put complementary policies in place. The real trick will be to ensure that we are able to make everybody in our community understand the need to act and not be as divided as they currently are. And there are many other things that I can say, but I think generally to your two points, Andrew, that will be at least an opening statement.
Thank you.